After this and a few other messages, we'll be going to the Kennedy Space Center, where we'll be looking at the space shuttle and speaking with an eyewitness who saw the last shuttle mission.
For local news and views and the greatest variety of music, this is Southern FM 88.3.
Well, the Space Shuttle Discovery is in space at the moment on its last mission, and in fact, it is only a few hours away from the landing. Now, bearing in mind that the landings sometimes get waved off or postponed, this landing is scheduled to happen at 3:57 tomorrow morning, our time here in Melbourne. That'll be 11, just 3 minutes before midday at the Kennedy Space Center. Now, given the unsettled weather they have in Florida, that there's a good chance that it will get a wave off and it could land on the following orbit an hour and a half later, and it could be waved off and actually stay in space another couple of days before they finally have to decide, look, we're going to bring this thing down somewhere. And yes, so when I was over there, I saw the same space shuttle Discovery on mission STS-131, and we all went out to the landing site and watched for it to land, and it got a wave off because it was a bit foggy, and an hour and a half later it was still a bit cloudy and windy, so they waved it off and we had to come back the next day. And again, it got waved off the first landing attempt. Again, there was a bit of low cloud and fog around. But on the second attempt, wow, what a sight. And it came in, and I have broadcast that commentary on the show. Well, this mission is called STS-133. It is the final mission for the Space Shuttle Discovery. Not, as you may have heard on the report, the final shuttle mission. No, no, no. There's still one, definitely one more to come, and maybe two more to come. But this is the last one for the Orbiter Discovery, at least as plans stand at the moment. Well, I wasn't able to get to this last mission, this one that's up here now, but joining us now from the Space Association of Australia is Stuart Gangell, and he's a member of the association, and he was there. So, Stuart, welcome to the Space Show.
Thanks, Andrew.
What was it like to actually see a space shuttle launch?
Well, like yourself, I don't think anyone can really appreciate what it's like to be there. You can see it in the movies or IMAX and those sorts of things, but to actually be there and feel the vibration going through the air, to actually hear it, and the flame crackling as it soars through the sky is really incredible.
It sort of beats the chest a bit, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. The closer you are, it'll beat a lot harder.
So where were you?
This is the second time I've seen the launch. This time I was on a boat in the Banana River, and we were about 15 kilometres from the launch pad. Mm-hmm. Whereas the previous time I went in 2007 was on the causeway.
Now, explain what you mean by the river and the causeway, please.
Yeah, the causeway is obviously a road that feeds between NASA and Cape Canaveral to its other launch pads. And where I was this time was on just slightly north, on a boat, obviously, on the Banana River, off the main that connects to Cocoa Beach and Cape Canaveral.
Now, think of river, and you're near the coast. You think of sort of a river running at right angles to the coast and running into the ocean. The Banana River, for those who have never been there, is quite different, isn't it?
It is, yeah. From what they tell us, or even when we're on the boat, the depth of the water through the Banana River has only been about 4 to 6 feet throughout its course. So
it's more like a lagoon, isn't it?
In a sense, yeah. And the water level is actually controlled through locks. Where all the pleasure cruise boats are, all the ocean boats come in, and that water level is maintained throughout the year.
Mm. So if just helping people visualise it, you've got the Atlantic Ocean.
Yes.
Then moving west, inland, you've got a line of sand hills, basically.
Correct, yeah.
And that's where the launch pads are.
Yes.
Very near sea level, almost at sea level. And then you've got the Banana River, which at that point would be, what, a kilometre or so wide or two?
Probably at least that, yes. Yeah. Yes. One and a half, depending on where you are.
And then you go further inland and you've got what's called Merritt Island.
Correct.
And that's varies in width, depending, up to 10 kilometres wide, doesn't it? But
I take the word for that.
It varies a bit, doesn't it, in width. And then you've got the Indian River.
Correct, yes.
Which is the major intercoastal waterway.
Yeah.
And then you get solid land, finally, yeah. Which is where the towns like Titusville are, and then you go inland further than that, you've got Orlando and where Disney World is and all that sort of thing.
Correct, yeah.
Okay. So how did you get to be on a boat?
Long story short, I guess when we wanted to see the launch on the tour that I was travelling with back in November last year, we couldn't get tickets for the causeway. They just sell out so quick and so demanding as such. And people I was in contact with where I was staying at the time at Cocoa Beach said that some people they know have a boat, which they extend courtesy to people at the accommodation where I was staying. So we kept in touch with those, and those people, Captain Pixie and Captain Mike, as they all call themselves, and we went around to their place and, hopped on a boat and away we went.
Oh, how lucky. Because the general public, unless you've got a ticket to go onto, basically onto NASA territory.
Correct.
How far away would you be if you didn't have that ticket?
It depends whether you mentioned Titusville. Again, you can be about 15 kilometres away. The causeway is around about 7 or 8 kilometres, I believe, probably a little bit further. And then at Cocoa Beach and et cetera, where we were on the boat, 15 plus kilometres, yeah.
Okay. And when I saw STS-131 launched in April last year, the press site where you see the countdown clock and all that sort of thing, that's 5 kilometres away from the actual launch pad.
That's right, yeah.
Yes. And that's as close as anyone ever gets, except for the emergency crew.
Yeah.
And the astronauts themselves, of course, who are in the shuttle. Okay. You had a bit of problem getting there, didn't you?
I did, yeah. Flight getting up from Melbourne to Sydney was fine, but leaving Sydney, there was a spare parts problem with the plane needed, and so we were delayed a couple of hours, which meant I missed the connection from LA to Chicago, so I had to stay in LA for another 11 hours, and by the time I got onto the connecting flight from Chicago to Orlando, I arrived at 9:20, 9:30 on the day of the launch at Orlando Airport.
So, and I'd say you'd be pretty whacked out too.
quickly get into a car, pick up some friends from the hotel, and then we frantically drove out to Cocoa Beach to meet Captain Mike and Captain Pixie, get on the boat, and yeah.
So where did you decide to stay, in Orlando or at Cocoa Beach?
In Orlando time, yeah. Mm. Yeah, there was one gentleman who I met at Sydney. He was on the tour that I went on in November as well. Yeah. So he wanted to go and see it again, and he brought one of his friends as well. So
yeah, and Orlando's about 90 kilometres from the Cape, isn't it? Around about that sort of distance. A bit like driving from Melbourne to Geelong.
We did the trip a few times in car, and I think it's pretty much on an hour's drive in actual fact. Mm. Mm. So I think from where we were staying, which was sort of south Orlando, it was, I think from memory, around about 50 miles, 80 k's or such.
Yes. And, of course, on much of that freeway, it's a bit scary, isn't it? You can drive at what they call 70 miles an hour, about 130 kilometres an hour.
Yeah, 70 miles an hour all the way there.
Yeah. Okay. You tried to see it in November. What happened then?
As we just went through the broadcast with the Glory, you have problems, and it was supposed to launch, I think, November the 1st, November the 4th, I think, when it was the first time. And then there were a few delays snowballing from there on, and there was expectation to launch the next day or a couple of days later. And I think we arrived on the Monday, and there was a good chance it would probably launch on the Friday. But one thing led to another, and it obviously didn't launch until, just the other week.
So what was the reason why it was delayed all that time from November? Normally when it's a delay, it's just a few days. But why was it from November until March?
From what I understand, reading reports on the web, two main problems, one of which was fixed rather quickly, was the leak in the fuel tank, I think. But the other one was relating to the cracks in the struts and ribbing of the external fuel tank, which they had to spend a bit of time repairing.
Hmm. Did you have time to see anything else? About the launch itself. Let's continue talking about that. What was the weather like?
Weather was good, yeah, actually a little bit warmer than Melbourne, a few degrees warmer. I think most of the days there was about 25 to 28, 29 degrees Celsius. Mm. Weather was really good. Wind did start to pick up a little bit prior to the launch. We felt it out on the boat anyway.
Yes, it was an afternoon launch, wasn't it?
That's correct, yeah.
And the wind, you get these onshore winds blowing.
And there was a bit of cloud cover coming in, actually, and speaking to other people, there was no cloud that they could see for the launch, but where we were down at Cocoa Beach, Cape Canaveral, there was certainly cloud going over the top of us, which restricted our view of the actual launch when we were filming it as such too.
Mm. So how long after liftoff could you see it for?
Generally, it disappears after about 2 minutes, thereabouts, yeah. Mm. We got to see it for about a minute, I guess, in between cloud cover.
Well, at least you got to see it.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what about the plume afterwards? You had a lot of smoke and everything like that. Where did that go in your launch? And did it persist for a while or did it quickly disperse?
It does disperse quite quickly, actual fact. But, yeah, it's certainly recognisable and it's almost as big as some of the clouds in the sky there for quite some time. But once the launch is over, everyone just talking about the launch and everything and it's sort of forgotten about. you don't tend to look at the plume so much after the fact.
Yes.
But, yeah.
Okay. Because when I saw the launch, it was just before dawn and hardly any wind at all. And the plume went up and changed colours as it went up into the day. The shuttle actually launched into sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
And then it made a noctilucent cloud. And that noctilucent cloud glowed in the sky for over an hour. Just marvellous changing colours. And people had seen dozens and dozens of shuttle launches said they'd never seen that before. So it was pretty amazing. But the low-down cloud, it just drifted very slowly away towards the west. And again, it was still there an hour after launch.
Okay.
Yeah, so it was pretty amazing. But as I said, with a bit of wind, as you had, gets blown away real quick.
Yeah. I think they rely on the wind coming in to clear the cloud pretty quickly.
Mm. Okay. Well, you weren't over there terribly long this time.
No, only just a few days, yeah.
Yeah. So did you have time to see anything else?
Yeah, we'd made plans to, after the launch, obviously go to the Kennedy Visitor Centre, Space Centre, and see the launch pad without the shuttle in there this time and take some photographs of it there and take in a bit more of the sights that you don't seem to have enough time to see and enjoy as such.
Mm.
Obviously go on the space shuttle ride. It's always
So the public, how soon after the launch did they open the pad up?
I think it's at least 2 hours before any of the employees as such go down to post-inspection as such. But for visitors like ourselves, they've still got the tours that will still go out and drive past the launch pad. But even then, as close as you get would be about half a kilometre or something like that at least.
Oh, no, a lot further than that normally.
Okay.
The observation gantry.
The observation, we went
that's,
there.
That's
just over a mile, I think.
Yes, about 1.5 kilometres, I think, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And you didn't get closer than that, did you?
No, definitely not, no.
So I was surprised when I was there. Of course, the launch was at 6:20 a.m. and the tours and so on don't start till 9 o'clock.
Okay.
By the time you get people on buses and things, it's 10 o'clock and so on. But certainly by lunchtime that day, the tours are on their way. And I actually took one of the tours,
okay.
just like you, because I wanted to now get back to the pad, although I'd been up as a member of the press, been right up next to the shuttle before the launch. I wanted to see the pad without the shuttle there. And so, again, I went to the public tower, as you did, and again, saw the empty stand there. It was quite a sight.
It is, yeah. Yeah. Mm. Any other things you get to enjoy is the other attractions that at the Kennedy Space Centre. There's also the IMAX or 3D movies that they offer as well. Then the other day was out to the Astronaut Hall of Fame, which is just up the road, about 3 miles up there. And at the Astronaut Hall of Fame, more memorabilia, more of a museum. And also they offer the what they call the ATX, Astronaut Training Centre or Experience, which is also good to take on as well too.
Mm.
And then on the other day we went to, did get to Titusville, obviously see the view from up there, looking across to the Vehicle Assembly Building, which stands out wherever you are, happen to be in Florida. And also to go to the what they call the Space Walk of Fame.
Yes.
But unfortunately, it was closed when we got there. So, yeah.
Oh. I wonder why that would be, because it's normally open just about every day of the week.
Every yeah. day of the week, but on weekends it's closed.
Ah.
This time.
Okay. Well, listeners, we do have in my bag of goodies I brought back from the thing when I was over there last year, a audio tour of the Spacewalk of Fame Museum with one of the long-term workers there. And we'll have that on the Space Show sometime when my discussion with him as we did an audio tour around that fascinating museum. Pity you missed that out.
Yeah, we tried to look through the peer through the window, through the blinds, though. We could see a little bit there and checked on the website again. Yes, yes, remember seeing those things, but, yeah,
yes.
Would have been good to go.
Oh, what a pity.
Yeah.
Okay, anything else you saw when over there? Or you had to get back on the plane?
That was pretty much it, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about the other time when you went over there in November? What did you do anything then?
Yeah, well, when I can get away from going to the Kennedy Space Center, just to take in a little bit of shopping. There's some great shopping over there, the facilities. For any other viewers, listeners, obviously you've got Universal, Disney World, all those sort of facilities happening there as well. And yeah, but plenty to see and do in Orlando. But obviously going out to Kennedy and seeing the shuttle, or see where the shuttle launched from, certainly an experience.
Well, thanks for joining us on the Space Show, Stuart.
Yeah, thank you, Andrew.
And that was Stuart Gangell, a member of the Space Association of Australia, who was at their last space shuttle launch. Now, many of you have been aboard the space shuttle on this last mission. That is, if you have been one of the 194,181 photos that were uplinked to the shuttle Discovery via Mission Control at the Johnson Space Center in Houston. And these images have been returned to Earth through a data transmission, and contributors are now able to print certificates verifying their photos flew aboard Discovery. Now, more than 98,000 other photographs already have been submitted to fly aboard the next space shuttle mission. Shuttle Endeavour's STS-134 flight is targeted to launch on April the 19th, and submissions will be accepted through to the lift-off date. Now, if you want to participate in this, I have a website which I'll read to you after this announcement by Steve Lindsay. Now, we've announced this many times on the space show, and I guess many of you had your face aboard the last space shuttle mission. But here's astronaut Steve Lindsay, the commander of the shuttle STS-133. The Discovery, talking about the face in space.
Hi, this is Steve Lindsay, commander of the Space Shuttle Discovery. Welcome aboard the International Space Station. We'd like to thank all of you who participated in the Face in Space program. We understand that more than 140,000 of you submitted your pictures so that we could fly them on board the Space Shuttle Discovery. We appreciate your participation in this event. We appreciate and thankful that we have you on board with us. Please remember to visit the website to print out your certificate of participation. And thanks again for flying with NASA.
So for those of you who have done that and had your name aboard the space shuttle, here's the web address to go back to. It's Face in Space, all is one word, Face in Space, all one word, .nasa.gov. So faceinspace.nasa.gov. And you will need to remember the code that you had at the time that you entered your photograph. If you missed out on that, well, there's still a chance to go in space aboard their next space shuttle, which is a mission by Endeavour, the shuttle Endeavour, and it's due to lift off on April 19. And again, you go to that website, go already prepared with a digital photograph of yourself, a JPEG photograph of yourself, and you enter in there and you enter in your name and your postcode and your you know, add your photograph, and they'll fly it aboard the next space shuttle. So do that. Right now, though, we're going back to that thing now that I started just a moment ago, and that was astronaut Steve Lindsay, and he begins with the, all the other crew, a tribute to this Space Shuttle Discovery, which is now on its final mission.
Hi, I'm Steve Lindsay, commander of Space Shuttle Discovery on Discovery's final voyage into space, her 39th trip into space. We've prepared a more formal tribute to Discovery that we will put together later. But for now, on this final day on orbit, I'd just like to get each crew member to say a few words and their thoughts of Discovery. For me, Discovery is a very personal thing because I've actually flown Discovery 3 times now. My first flight I flew in 1999 on STS-95 when we brought Senator John Glenn back into space. I flew her again as one of the return-to-flight test missions, STS-121, in 2006. And then finally, STS-133, her final flight. So Discovery is a very special vehicle to me. Discovery has contributed greatly to the space shuttle program. She's flown a good portion of the major, most significant flights in the space shuttle program. She deployed the Hubble Space Telescope, 13 trips to the space station, contributing the assembly of the space station in a very big way. She's been to the Mir space station. She's done science missions. She's done all of the return-to-flight test missions, both after Challenger and after Columbia, bringing us back into space after those tragedies. On this final day on orbit, when I think about Discover, I think about all that. I think about all the people that went before us on this vehicle, but mostly what I think about are the thousands and thousands of people across the space shuttle program these past 30 years who designed this vehicle, built this vehicle, have taken care of this vehicle in operating this vehicle, not just from the cockpit, but also those who operated this vehicle from the ground. And that is her greatest legacy to me.
I remember marveling at the space shuttle at the New Air and Space Museum when I was a teenager. And now as we fly Discovery's final voyage, I still marvel at her today. I would call the space shuttle Discovery a dream machine, and it's the people that make the ship, the people that are involved in all our training, and it's a testament to the people that maintain her, train her, that the first flight is as clean as it is on the final flight.
In 1948 in Europe, after the ravages of World War II, a bunch of wild-eyed scientists got together and mapped out a vision for the future. Among them was Wernher von Braun. He saw a vision where we'd have of mankind pushing out into the solar system, on a pyramid of space stations being serviced by a fleet of shuttles that went to and from the Earth. Here we are at the turn of the century, the 21st century, with a fleet of shuttles that does just that, and a space station that could potentially be a platform for leaping off into the solar system. Discovery is one of those workhorse vessels that got us off on that vision and has us going and will take us into the future, and hopefully will be a model for how we do this later on in the 21st century.
And as a ship of Discovery, Discovery has been truly amazing. And I was thinking earlier, when we look back, even now at the shipwrights of the 19th and 18th century, and we marvel at the work they did, in the future, when we go back and we build another vehicle that's as capable as a space shuttle, we're going to look back at Discovery and the engineers, the designers, the people who maintain her, and we'll have to ask them how in the world they did that, because it's truly amazing. And this vehicle, even though it's only spent a total of 365 days or so on orbit, which is less than those earlier ships was spent on a single mission, its accomplishments are truly amazing, as the commander noted earlier. And so thinking about it and looking back, I'm just proud to be a part of this team and a part of this crew on our final flight.
Well, I know a lot of sailors out there are familiar with the term sea kindly. You use those words of a vessel that just is strong and powerful, yet easy to handle, and works very well at sea. And I think Discovery is that way. She's space kindly, if you will. She points where you steer her, she hauls what you put in her hold, and she just performs magnificently. It's an incredibly powerful machine. It leaps off the planet. We were firing the thrusters a little bit earlier, and it's just amazing how this ship can maneuver. And I think that one of the greatest legacies is going to be the space station that we just left. When you look at the space station, you think, my gosh, that is so big. How on earth did we get 1,000,000 pounds to orbit? Well, this space shuttle helped to get a lot of that mass up there. I think the legacy that she leaves behind is quite incredible. And all that makes her strong and powerful and gives her that sea-kindly nature is all the hands that have taken care of her, that fiercely defend her and service her when she gets back to home port. And even though it's the last time, we really do look forward to bringing her back to her home port and back into those caring hands.
And I think I'll be continuing on a common theme here, but there's a few words that come to mind for me when I think about my own experience with Discovery and the Space Shuttle program, as well as just, you know, how we think about the program itself. And that's a blessing and the words thank you. And for me, out of college, I was very, very fortunate to be hired on by NASA at the Kennedy Space Center. And this is over 20 years ago, and have the opportunity to work up close and personal with these just incredible, indescribably beautiful vehicles. And I have a vivid recollection of coming to work at KSC one of the first days, and I was very fortunate to be working in the orbiter processing facility, which is the big hangar where we take care of the orbiter part of the space shuttle. And having somebody walk me into the facility, out into the middle of the floor, and asking me if I knew where the space shuttle was, and I looked around and, you know, couldn't see anything. The gear wasn't deployed, and I remember looking up and seeing this just wall of black tiles, and from that very second being just so, like, overwhelmed and impressed by the orbiter. And I'd like to just say thank you to all the people who have taken such great care of her, of Discovery and the other space shuttles, and making it a safe place for us to live and work up here. And there's tears coming, so I will I'll stop very soon. But I'm looking forward, like Mike said, to bringing her home to the people who care for her most, and to the time when we're on that runway and we can look back and still see her standing on her own gear with her own proud wings holding her up before she goes back to that hangar for the last time. And thank you.
So after we bring Discovery home tomorrow, she's going to go through some decommissioning, and then she will go to a place of honor. It's a place where all the public can go see her, and hopefully see her as we saw her, as all those workers have seen her, as the engineers and designers and the operators from the ground have seen her as well. Discovery is a great ship of exploration, one that our nation should be very proud of. And I am hopeful that Discovery and the other orbiters in this space shuttle program will continue to inspire the entire nation for many, many years to come.
And they were the six crew members of the space shuttle Discovery, talking there from space. Now, don't forget that landing is tomorrow morning, Melbourne time, at 4:03, provided the weather is okay. It's very weather-dependent, the landing of the space shuttle. And there we'll leave the space shuttle thing, and we've got this very important message about stroke.
What's the leading cause of stroke in Australia? Look closer. It's not what you may think. It's a blood clot, and it can be as small as a pinhead, but can cause a major stroke or heart attack.
I had a stroke last year, and my doctor told me to exercise more, but I thought it was to lose weight. What I didn't know was that I was at risk of having blood clots in other parts of my body, such as my heart.
If you've had a stroke or heart attack, you're at increased risk of having another. Visit your doctor today to see if you're doing enough to reduce your risk, or visit lookcloser.com.au. Brought to you by the National Stroke Foundation.